Hey everyone, I'm Rod Roddenberry, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Hello and welcome to Stage 9, Trek FM show about the people who make Star Trek. I'm Mike.
I'm John.
And today we're going to be talking about the latest pilot from Brian Fuller, the co-creator of Star Trek Discovery and also writer of various episodes of Star Trek Voyager and other things, American Gods. But before we do that, we've got some more Discovery casting news, of course.
Yes.
Because the show has like 1,500 characters in it.
Apparently so. That's not really an exaggeration.
No, not really. So a couple things. There were four new people announced.
Yes.
But five casting decisions which were announced. First off, Claire McConnell, who is in a movie called Dim the Fluorescence. I think she's not that experienced yet. But she's going to be in the series. So is a guy named Damon Runyon, who has been in a number of television shows, including Suits and Supernatural. Rekha Sharma, who's probably the biggest name in the group. She's been on like pretty much every genre television show you could possibly imagine, from V to The 100 to Battlestar Galactica, where she played a very prominent role where most people would be familiar with her if they watched Battlestar Galactica.
And before anybody asks us if she was a Cylon, the answer to that question with Battlestar Galactica is always probably. So, but we invite you to watch the show and find out for yourself.
Yes, and then there's Kenneth Mitchell is the fourth and final new person. Now, the interesting thing about him is that he is going to be playing a Klingon named Cole. Why is that interesting? Because there was another guy who was already cast as a Klingon named Cole.
Yes.
That was Shahzad Latif, who we talked about. He played Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde on Penny Dreadful.
Yeah.
Now, does that mean that Shahzad Latif is no longer on the show?
It does not.
Nope. It does not mean that at all. Shahzad Latif is now playing a Starfleet officer named Lieutenant Tyler. Now, okay, let's take a step back here, okay? Let's just first, okay, Rekha Sharma, she's playing a security officer aboard the Discovery, okay?
Yeah.
It's interesting to note that they specified aboard the Discovery, okay? We'll get to that in a minute. But she's badass. I love her on Battlestar Galactica. She played the president's assistant.
Yes.
Who, in later seasons, has a much more prominent role.
She does.
She played an integral role in what I consider to be maybe the finest hour in television history with Crossroads Part 2, the season 3 finale.
No.
Yes.
No. I got no problem with her or her performance, but that is not the finest hour in television history by a long shot.
I think it might be.
No.
Yeah.
No. No, not when you have in the conversation things like the season 2 opener of Twin Peaks, which you haven't gotten to yet.
No, but I did watch episode 3 today, and I saw the carpet, the zigzaggy carpet.
So now you get the Black Lodge reference.
Now I get it. I don't know what the Black Lodge is, because it was just in a room in a dream, but yeah.
Well, spoilers, he was in the Black Lodge in that dream.
Okay.
That's not a big spoiler. Trust me, it's not going to make a whole lot of sense by the end either.
Oh, well, but, really? I'm shocked.
I know.
Okay.
Right. Yeah. But anyway, the problem wasn't her with that hour of television. She is a good actress. She really is. I mean, you know, I am primarily familiar with her from Battlestar Galactica, and I always enjoyed what she brought to the role. She, you know, she portrayed what that role needed, which was a confident, you know, assistant, a confidant, somebody who, you know, interacted and got things done.
And it was also a role which changed a lot over the course of the show. You know, the character that she started playing is not the character that she finished playing, you know?
Yeah.
And she was able to navigate that really well. I mean, okay, fine. We'll agree to disagree on the greatness of Crossroads Part 2, but...
Oh, will we ever?
I honestly do not see how... Because there has never been a moment in television history for me which has rivaled watching that at the end of that episode and being like, oh my God, oh my God. And like, you know, needing to call up like Max and be like, did you see that? What does it mean? We have to wait a year. What does it mean?
I was in the other camp of people going, oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. No, how could you do that? Come on.
Because that opened up the doors to like any possibility.
Even Moore was willing to make fun of himself for that ending. Come on.
It meant the show could be anything. Anything.
It means the show can be anything. By that criteria, the season 3 finale of Star Trek Enterprise was an absolute masterwork because Nosferatu in a Nazi uniform walks out of the shadows and it could be anything.
No.
Anything after that.
No,
it
because
could be
with that.
Legions of Nosferatu in an alternate timeline
how
running
many
around
times,
and it's anything.
How many times have we been to alternate timelines with, you know, alien Nazis in Star Trek? Okay. You see that and you're like, oh, so they're doing that?
No, Alien was a new spin. We've seen alternate timeline Nazis and we've seen alternate planet Nazis. But
no,
alternate timeline Nazis.
Trojan in Voyager.
But they weren't like Nazis.
They were freaking Nazis. Yes.
No, were they? They were like in the little SS uniforms?
Yes.
I don't remember that.
Well, that's probably for the best, but it doesn't matter.
Probably so. To the journey.
Actually, I think that episode was written by Brian Fuller, if I'm not mistaken. It doesn't matter. Anyway.
No, it doesn't.
Not at all. With Crossroads Part 2, it was like, the thing about it, okay, I mean, there was a lot of stuff going on in there, okay, a whole lot of stuff in that episode, which is like any of it, which is like, oh, that's so badass. But the thing about it that put it over the top into what does it all mean was the music, okay?
Oh, no.
Yes.
No, come on, man. This is redonkulous because... My reaction to that episode, especially the ending, was 180 degrees different from yours.
Okay.
Like, I didn't want to come back to the show after that.
Oh, my God. I don't know what's going on here. I don't understand.
The world doesn't make any sense anymore, does
not,
it? This
not
is the
at
first
all.
Time ever
makes,
on stage
makes,
9 that Mike
makes,
and I have hit an impasse like this.
It makes less sense to me than it did to Rekha Sharma's character at the end of Crossroads Part 2.
And that attributes everything to her performance as an actress, as she embodied my own confusion at the end of that episode. What is happening right now?
Yeah.
So,
but then, you know, I mean, that her arc in that last season was amazing. And then when you got to the finale, like the very last scene that she's in is so good. It cracks me up. I know it shouldn't crack me up, but maybe it because there is a moment there where, like, you know, a thing is about to happen, and right before it happens, like, she knows what's going to happen when this thing happens, right? She knows the implications of this thing, right, that everyone's about to do. And right before it happens, she's like, okay, now, before we do this thing, I just want to make sure that everybody's nice and calm and that we don't take anything too seriously here and that we realize that tensions are high and everything. And that cracks me up. I love it so much.
Okay.
Which, that's another great finale. I have issues with the finale of Battlestar Galactica, but it's pretty amazing.
Well, I will say that the finale was good enough that my analogy became that it was like watching somebody who's a really talented, you know, like a swimmer who's really good at the high dive, like their foot slips when they jumped off. That's the end of season three. And then like they're having trouble recuperating, and that's like the beginning of season four. And you think it's going to be like this tragic thing, and they still sort of like, you know, belly flop at the end, but it's not like this dramatic, there's like no blood in the pool sort of thing. So I was like, okay, well, everybody walked out all right.
I was just about to make an Olympic analogy too. I was going to go with, you know, maybe like the uneven bars or whatever it is, you know, in gymnastics or whatever,
and they landed on a broken leg.
No, like they have like nearly flawless routine, you know. And then when they're dismounting, they take the slightest step back. So instead of getting like a 10, they get like a 9.7.
If I move over to the unparalleled bars or whatever it's called, they land on their head. But they're okay. They're okay. It's just a concussion.
Like as they're taking them off, you see them give the thumbs
right,
up.
Right, they
sign.
Give the thumbs up with the neck brace on. You're like, okay, they're going to pull through.
Yeah, no, I totally disagree with that. Anyway, one of the other interesting things is that Sharma just very recently, I don't even know if the episode is out yet, but she's on an episode of Star Trek Continues.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, the latest episode of Star Trek Continues, if I'm not mistaken.
That's so wild because of all of the, you know, all of the stuff that went on with the fan film stuff and the big fervor over that and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And somebody from, you know, essentially a fan production is now going to be in the official production. That's like so wild. That's crazy.
Yeah, it is. It is really crazy. But you know, it's cool nonetheless. And yeah. She's definitely a fan favorite among genre television watchers. And
sure.
I'm a big fan too, so I'm really looking forward to that. But now, okay, Kenneth Mitchell playing Cole, who, you know, he lists in his Twitter bio that he's House Leader Cole, so that's kind of interesting. But Shahzad Latif playing Lieutenant Tyler, Starfleet officer, Lieutenant Tyler, not Discovery officer. Now, this is why this is interesting, right? There's another Lieutenant Tyler floating around the galaxy at this particular moment in Star Trek history, and that's the navigator aboard the Enterprise, Lieutenant Jose Tyler. Now, that dude was blonde, granted, and Latif is, you know, very much not blonde, you know? But,
true.
But then again, you know, I mean, hey.
We haven't seen pictures of him on set.
And hey, Khan was, you know, Benedict Cumberbatch. So, you know what?
No, he wasn't.
Well, you know, I, you know, it's a thing. So, you know,
yeah.
I mean, it's
would be really, really interesting because they did. I mean, even back when Fuller was working on the production, they said that there would be, you know, nods to what else is going on in the Star Trek galaxy. Universe, whatever, you know, at that time. So I think it's completely within the realm of reason or possibility for them to, you know, run across the Enterprise at some point and be like, hey, what's up, yo?
Yeah, or maybe even he was aboard the Enterprise, or maybe he's going to go on the Enterprise. Who knows, right?
Well,
maybe he's a representative from the Enterprise. Who knows?
I'm more interested about, you know, House Leader Cole, because I think that speaks again to the whole diplomatic angle that they're obviously bringing in with Sarek and everything is, you know, does that mean that there's some unrest within the Empire and that's why, you know, Discovery is brought in? You know, like, I mean, that opens up real possibilities to me.
Yeah.
That there's something really intriguing going on.
If I'm not mistaken, when they first announced that character, they said that it was a captain of a ship. Okay. And like a protege of, I think it was like T'Kuvma, Chris Obi's character,
okay.
Who's like the leader of the Klingons. So he definitely seems like he's, you know, sort of like a, not a leader, but sort of like, you know, maybe like vice presidential kind of,
right.
You know,
right. You know, but with the casting change, I mean, people sort of freaked out. I mean, the typical clickbait headlines came along where everybody's like, "Oh, Discovery's going to burn. It's over. It's done."
Yeah,
I think we both sort of took. It's like people get recast. It happens.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay. Like they saw something and they were like, you know what? You'd be better over here. Or maybe he had a reaction to the makeup even.
Maybe.
You know, maybe it's like a Wizard of Oz Buddy Ebsen thing where it's like, you know, the makeup didn't work and they were like, well, you know what? We still like you and we got this role over here.
Yeah. I mean, I could definitely see it being a scenario where it's like, you know, oh, you know, we got this guy to play this role and then, you know, you see him on set for a day or two and you're like, you know, he would really kill it in this other role, you know?
Yeah.
So, and he tweeted something. He's like, it's going to be awesome. It's going to take a while, but it's going to be awesome. You know, yeah. I mean, suggesting, I mean, we're writing this on, or we're recording this on what could very well be the eve of a writer's strike. So there's
yes.
that.
Yes,
you know, Jason Isaacs just tweeted a thing where he's like, table read for episode 3, which I thought someone else tweeted that like 2 or 3 weeks ago. It sounds like maybe they've only shot like the pilot and one more episode at this point. I don't know. It does seem, and you think they started shooting in January. Now we're in May, and they've probably only shot about 3 hours of this thing. That's it is slow for television for sure. But you know, maybe there was some course correction or whatever that was done, you know, after the pilot. You know, I mean, that's definitely, you know, most TV shows, you get the pilot, you test it and everything, and then there's the recasting and all that other good stuff before you, you know, fully commit. And they don't really have that luxury here with a full series order, but maybe there is some tweaking which is going on, you know, in between.
I still say it was their biggest mistake. CBS's biggest mistake was announcing it and pinning a launch date on it. They should have, in the very beginning, they should have just said, hey, new Star Trek show's coming out. We'll get it to you soon.
Yeah, before and they even had a concept, really.
Right. I think that demonstrates how TV and film are just totally different animals, because a movie, you know, they do that all the time where Star Trek, you know, Star Wars Episode 9 is coming out in May, May 2019, 2020, whatever year it is. And they know that because a movie production schedule is fairly predictable. You know, barring a writer's strike, of course.
Yeah.
But even during the writer's strike, they can still do pre-production sketches and costume designs and stuff like that. And the director can brainstorm where he wants to go. They just can't engage the writer on it legally. But, well, I mean, within union rules, legally, I'm sure they could. But so the production schedule of a movie is, I think, a much more regimented thing, because it's such a big machine. Once you get that machine moving, it's a thing. To bring that motion to a stop is a lot. I mean, look at, Apocalypse Now, which probably isn't the best example because it did go on for so long. But Martin Sheen has a heart attack and there's actually a recording of the director saying, Marty Sheen doesn't have a heart attack unless I say he has a heart attack and we're still going to be filming. You know, like that's a thing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Oh, well, we'll see what happens.
We will.
All right, so should we move on to American Gods?
Let's do it, man.
Okay.
So American Gods.
This is the new show from Brian Fuller, who's created it along with Michael Green, who is writing the upcoming Alien Covenant movie, or co-writing it at least. And it's based on a book by Neil Gaiman, and it stars a whole ton of people. Ricky Whittle, I guess, is the main guy. But it's also got Ian McShane, and even though they don't really appear in this, I mean, Crispin Glover is going to be a lead.
Yeah.
Yeah, we missed him.
You know the show's going to be weird if Crispin Glover's name is in it.
Like, yes.
You see Crispin Glover in the credits, you're like, okay, it's going to get a little wacky at some points.
Yeah.
Not a knock on him. It's just like he does that really well.
Oh, yeah. No, for sure. He's amazing. You want to give a synopsis of this thing?
A guy is in prison and he gets released. He finds out because his wife has died. And along the way, it turns into sort of a bizarre road trip from hell where he does encounter Ian McShane on his flight, and then in a bar, and McShane is very, very big on trying to get him to work for him. And he meets these strange characters along the way, and everything is very much, you know, set up toward a character who's lost. And he keeps having these strange encounters where he doesn't know what's going on. So he's actually, and he's really a good, you know, introduction character, you know, world builder, where he's experiencing stuff for the first time as we are. And so basically that is, I mean, that's the show in a nutshell so far. It's very stylized, and it does open, though, I will say, with one of the most brutal sorts of scenes I've ever seen on television. Well, I mean, I guess this doesn't count as television. It counts as television because it's Stars.
Yeah, it's television.
Yeah, but that it opens, it kind of lets you know what you're in for immediately, because it basically starts with a tale of the Vikings landing on an island as they're searching for passage, and what they do to try to appease Odin to get them off of the island, because things aren't going particularly well. And you see a lot of really hyper-stylized violence, and you make a decision in that first 5 or 10 minutes. You're like, am I staying with this or am I not?
Well, the thing that struck me about that first scene, you know, we've watched all of Fuller's pilots here, and, you know, there is a quirkiness to his shows.
Oh, for sure.
Even the ones which are maybe sort of dark. And that first sequence with the Vikings, even though it is like one of the bloodiest things you'll ever see, like literally people getting chopped in half with, like, you know, shining style fountains of blood coming out of them, like to the point of it being not at all realistic. I guess that's part of it. Like, that scene is done very humorously.
There's a sense of humor about the fact that they keep doing this to themselves in an effort, you know, like you see the sort of broken logic of their killing each other in an effort to get off the, you know, like it's this sort of thing where it's like, you're not really thinking this through. Don't you need all of your resources to get the boat out of there? You know, and there is a dark humor about it, for sure, for sure.
And that kind of, like, it was an interesting way to start the show, and it really did kind of signal to me what was going to be coming later on, even though the rest of the show, while there are bits and pieces which are amusing, you know, like a lot of the sort of like banter between Ian McShane and Ricky Whittle, I thought was kind of funny. Like, McShane's character in general is a pretty funny character, but none of it is nearly as funny as that opening scene with the Vikings. And I don't know, like the thing about this show is it does seem so big, and I know that it's based on this novel, which apparently they don't even come close to finishing the novel in season one. You know, it's going to take, I think they said, like 3 years or something like that just to do the novel.
Well, I mean, you know, Hannibal was technically based on Red Dragon, but diverged greatly.
Right.
From that.
Yeah. But this first episode really does not seem to be so much of, like, you know, an example of what the rest of the series is going to be in the typical pilot sense. It feels more like just the first chapter in this story, which is a lot of setup, you know?
Yeah.
But there is
a fair amount of setup, yeah.
I think that, you know, even though, you know, the story that it's telling is, you know, sort of like satisfying, I mean, it leaves you on a cliffhanger, but it's satisfying in its structure. Like, yeah. I feel like this is not going to be what a typical episode of American Gods is going to play like.
I don't know. I think it might be, because this show, this one episode, very much feels... It inhabits the same sort of visual and tonal space that Hannibal did. And it's, you know, I think that this, because we've always had the discussion, what exactly is a showrunner? What exactly does that mean? Well, the common thread here is Fuller. And if I look at Hannibal and I look at this, I can see there is a creative force behind it that is driving it in a certain direction. That is, you know, saying it's going to be like this, and this is how it's going to work. I mean, the director of this one worked with Fuller on Hannibal,
yeah.
David Slade.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, obviously he brought in people that were very familiar with what he wanted from it. And as I was watching it, what I was sort of wondering, because of course there's the big debate that's never probably ever going to be properly settled for years. Why did Fuller leave Discovery?
Yeah.
And I think honestly, because he was going down this road. And I think that CBS got nervous. Now, I'm not saying as violently or as sexually graphic as this, but I think that CBS saw him going down this road and said no, and they made basically a corporate decision to quote-unquote protect the property. All conjecture on my part. But this is the space that Fuller has occupied for years. And it's a beautifully artistic space, and it really works when it's done right. But I could completely understand somebody blinking and saying, I don't know if this is going to play well with Star Trek fans. You know, like, and again, I'm not saying that it would be this show mm-hmm. as Star Trek Discovery. That's not what I'm saying. But, like, you know, if he wanted to push boundaries, this Hannibal and this are wonderful examples of how he likes to push boundaries. And I can kind of understand somebody getting nervous about it. That doesn't make it right, but I can understand it.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's a possibility. I mean, the other thing that I kind of take away from like, let's say those two examples are, you know, I haven't read either of those books, but from what I understand, like, they're considered to be pretty faithful adaptations in a sense.
No, not really.
I mean, like spiritually faithful, like... You know, in the way that Elmore Leonard thinks that Jackie Brown is the best adaptation of one of his books.
Well, I would say that Hannibal is a great spiritual adaptation of Red Dragon up to a point, and then it's very obvious a point at which where Fuller pushes forward into newer territory.
But do you think that I mean, would you say that newer territory is... very much in line with...
No, not really.
I mean, not in terms of, like, plot or anything, but in
no,
terms
I know.
Of, like...
No, no I don't really... I mean, I guess you could make the argument if you're taking the entire body of work as Harris wrote it, where it went eventually with the book Hannibal, then yeah, you could make that argument. But if you're saying just as Red Dragon... But as the entire series, yes, Hannibal eventually went in, the show eventually went into the space that Hannibal, the book, really seemed to find itself, which was something of a departure from the first two books, which were much more procedural in nature.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like, I mean, it's sort of a fascinating thing because the show Hannibal and the movie Manhunter come out of the same fountain, and they both... basically go to the extreme direction of that same source material.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean extreme, you know, man goes off into the straight up Miami Vice cop movie. And then, you know, Fuller embraces the whole body of work and goes into the more, you know, disconcerting moral ambiguity side of it that it gets to by the third book.
Hmm.
So, you know, it's that sort of thing.
Okay, well, that's interesting. That's interesting because what I was going to say was, like, if he is known for making, like, faithful adaptations of things, then, you know, I mean, it would suggest that Star Trek would be that too. You know, I don't know.
Yeah, but I mean, and again, I'm not saying that they did the right thing, and I'm not saying that it would have been a bad thing. I'm just saying that it would make sense to me if they got an inkling and they were like, I don't know if we really want to go fully embrace this.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe he said, well, that's what I want to do.
Yeah.
And again, I'm not saying that he would make American Gods as a Star Trek show. I'm saying that, you know, he wanted to go certain directions with certain things. And they were like, we're not ready to take that step. Thanks for getting us to this point.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that was just a takeaway after watching this show.
Well, yeah, that could be. It's interesting to note, and whether this is by design or coincidence or whatever, but there are a number of people who are associated with American Gods who are going to be working on Discovery, including a few directors. Adam Kane, who directed the second episode of Discovery, he directs the last two episodes of American Gods. Guillermo Navarro, cinematographer on the pilot of Discovery, he directed an episode of American Gods, and someone who it looks like, I guess, isn't working on Discovery anymore, but Vincenzo Natali, he directed an episode as well. And then as far as the cast is concerned, Chris Obi, you know, who plays the leader of the Klingons on Discovery, is a character in a later episode of American Gods. And we just talked about another cinematographer last week or a couple weeks ago, Darren Tiernan, who's going to be working on Discovery. He photographed three episodes of American Gods. So kind of cool. And I mean, part of that is probably, I think they were both shot in Toronto, right? So, you know, you hire people who are local.
Yeah. Right?
So, yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's cool that, like, Neil Gaiman is so involved in this show because it feels like, you know, they're really going to, you know, do it right in that sense. I mean, it only makes sense to involve him. And one of the things which got me really excited when I was reading some press about this thing is that Gaiman and Fuller and Green are hoping that American Gods will be successful and that its success will convince Warner Brothers that instead of making a Sandman movie, they should let the three of them make a Sandman television series.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
I think that'd be pretty awesome.
Here's the big question, though. Based on this pilot, do you watch the rest of the season?
Well, I guess that is the question, right? I mean, we're saying like, hey, it's weird, it's crazy. Do I watch the rest of the season? It's definitely something that I want to do. It's weird because like my podcasting commitments sort of like dictate what shows I watch and everything.
Sure, sure.
And that might mean it dictates, you know, me watching it, or it might mean that it doesn't. And I think, you know, given, you know, everything else being equal, I would continue to watch this show. But at the same time, I'm sitting here having not finished Westworld yet. And it's like there's some other things which I definitely want to watch first. What about you? Are you going to finish it?
This is the type of show where I'm on the fence about whether I would continue under normal circumstances, because while I'm not prudish in any sense, it is seems gratuitously graphic in certain scenes. And it's one of those things where I don't have a problem with that per se, but at the same time, you know, after a long day at work and a big commute, I'm like, like the Vikings thing. Yeah, I get what you're saying about the humor and everything, but I'm looking at it and I'm like, oh, this is gross, man. It's one thing if I know I'm in the box with Hateful Eight and it's Tarantino. Like, I go into that and I'm like, yeah, okay, I know where I'm going with this. And he still blows my mind. And I'm like, this is even grosser than I thought, but I know it's going to end. And whereas this, I'm like, I'm signing up for 7 more hours after this. That's kind of a rough ask, man.
I mean, I see what you're saying, but at the same time, like with the Viking scene, it's like, is it extremely gratuitous? Yes. But at the same time, it's like something that they do when there's like flashbacks, I guess, or dream sequences, they're letterboxed. And there's a scene where in that Viking sequence where a guy holding a sword's arm gets chopped off. The arm flies up, breaks frame, so it goes like into the black bar and then comes back down and lands like in horizontally in a dude's neck. And it's like, is that going to bother me? No, because it is so cartoonish
But there are other extremely graphic moments that, I mean, the last shot in the episode's pretty graphic. And there, you know, and it's pretty, you know, hyper realistic and everything. But then there's another very graphic scene around the midway point that, you know, I'm like, ah, okay, I could have gotten the point without it being Cinemax, but that's cool. Okay.
See, I'm totally okay with that. I don't know.
Yeah, but whatever. I mean, it's like full on like Cinemax After Dark, and it's like, well, yeah, I mean, I could get the point. You know, like again, I'm not like you shouldn't watch this, but I'm like, you know. I mean, I guess I'm just from the school where it's like, you know, you're kind of spending too long here. Like, let's move the story along, please. Seriously. Like, I don't like lingering on anything. Like, I like to, you know, move fast through, like, I get to the meat of the story. Because the thing is, the scenes where people are having conversations and the scenes where people were interacting, like the quote-unquote leprechaun at the bar, that was funny. I was laughing through that whole scene. Especially because it had fun with all of these Irish stereotypes. You know, I'm descended from those stereotypes. So, you know, I enjoy watching them. But, like, it's one of those things where, you know, I just like to keep the thing moving as opposed to lingering on anything for too long. And I think if I were to ping the pilot for anything, it's that I thought that there were certain moments where it was too in love with what it was doing and it didn't move forward fast enough. And that's sort of, I guess, the point where I find myself, where I'm like, you know, I get the style. I loved Hannibal, and Hannibal did the same sort of thing. So maybe if I watch the second episode, I'll be sold on it. But just coming off of the pilot, I'm kind of like, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I see what you're saying. And I feel like this is a show where the second episode is really going to maybe almost say more about what the series is going to be than the first one did.
Sure.
And I think maybe at that point, you know, I can make a determination as to whether or not to continue with the rest of the series, you know.
Sure.
So, I don't know, but yeah, it's there was things about it which I really loved. I mean, the opening title sequence I thought was fantastic, you know.
Oh yeah. It was. And
apparently, Shirley Manson does vocals on that thing, so that's...
No way, really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
The music throughout the episode, tip of the hat to Brian Reitzel.
Yeah.
You know, and he's fantastic, and he worked through Hannibal with Fuller as well, and the music was great.
Yeah.
So...
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it continues, for sure. But I am curious about it. I'm not 100% sold, but I am curious.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it.
Yeah. All right. Well, it's been fun talking about American Gods today, but that's not all we're talking about here on Trek FM this week. So here's a look at what you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
All right, I'll tell you what, you know, I have never, ever, ever worn a costume or cosplayed or anything like that. Now the challenge, the gauntlet has been out there. We're going to have to put together a Mugatu costume.
Mugatu costume.
We got to.
To the journey!
Make him taller. Give him some salt and pepper gray hair.
Yeah. Make those shoulders broader.
Computer, put a tattoo over his left eye. Oh my God, look what I just did!
I made it to Chakotay.
Warp 5.
Are you an outside entity that is watching you deal as the bad archer with the good archer? And Scott just looks at me and turns around and goes, oh, God, will someone come here and get Gary a script?
Meta Treks.
But these Romulans are still walking around in those nasty pointy shoulder tunics that they wear. I mean, what's up with that?
Doesn't seem like they shed as much of their identity as the Klingons
did. Yeah, not shedding as much of their identity.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out these shows and discover what we're talking about in your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button. That helps us out greatly and makes it easier for other listeners to find the show as they search iTunes. If you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Stitcher, TuneIn, SoundCloud, Windows Phone, and of course you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website and grab the RSS link as well. We'd like to thank our associate producers, Chris Steftenagel and Jeff Sutter. Thank you very much for helping us out, guys. If you want to be like Chris and Jeff, head on over to patreon.com/trekfm and become a patron of the network. If you visit patreon.com/trekfm, that's patreon.com/trekfm, you'll find our current goals and different milestone contribution levels, along with all the great perks we have for you, including early access to content, exclusive content, producer credits, and more. We really appreciate any support you can give us and hope you'll join the team. Again, you'll find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm. If you want to contact us, you can find us on Twitter at TrekFM or on Facebook at facebook.com/TrekFM. Facebook is also where you'll find the Babel Conference. Just type the Babel Conference, that's B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook, and we'll come right up. So, John, where can people find you on the internet?
Oh, gosh. Look for Castle Junkie. Sometimes he darts in and out of the spotlight. And you can also find me co-hosting Words with Nerves with my pal Craig, which is a weekly dose of zaniness. You can find me co-hosting Aggressive Negotiations over on the Nerd Party Network with Matthew Rushing. And you can find me co-hosting Great Shot Kid, which is like this show, only it looks at Star Wars creators. And I'm hosting that with a delightful chap named Mike Schindler.
Yeah, you know, Great Shot Kid, it's a cool show. You guys should check it out. If you like this show, you'll like that show. That's over on thenerdparty.com. You can also find me on talkfilmsociety.com doing a show called Soderbergh 2828, where we look at all of Steven Soderbergh's movies throughout his career. We just did an episode on Ocean's 11, you know, which, of course, was based on a movie written by Star Trek writer George Clayton Johnson. So head on over there and check that out. And you can find me on CommentaryTrackStars.com, where I do a show called Commentary Track Stars, where we do whatever the hell we want, including lots of audio commentaries.
A commentary on X2 that I listened to recently, where I got to sit down with you and Max and talk about some of these things, because quite frankly, you're both wrong on a couple of things, and okay, not just the opinion stuff. So
All right. So we got some facts wrong as well.
Well, I mean, just more of a silly debate about, like, the iron in the blood and what the iron in your blood versus the type of iron that that would be a ferrous metal that Magneto could actually manipulate, and the difference would be, and if you actually injected the magnetic type, the metal into a person, it would kill him by the following morning, and so you got to just be like, it's okay, it's for the movie, you know, that sort of thing.
All right, so we need to bring you on as our science advisor, I guess. Yeah.
Sure. I'll be the Michael Okuda of Commentary Track Stars.
Okay. Sounds good. All right. And you can also find me on Twitter at Mumbles3K. All right. So that's it for this week. Next week, we will be back to take a look at a movie written by Star Trek Nemesis writer John Logan, Any Given Sunday. I just feel that's how Al Pacino would have said it.